Hi, everybody. It is technically Tuesday, March 26th, 2024, and it's episode 504 of PodQuest.
Hey.
What's up?
We are recording this on the 26th, I said? Yeah, 26th. Yep. But this is actually probably going up on the 11th of April.
It's the future.
It's the, or past.
It's the past. Ooh, tell us what to fucking, I don't know, invest in. But yeah, I am going to be away, so we're doing a little bit of a special episode for this week. As usual, I am Chris. With me is Druten.
Hello.
And Walnut.
Yeah, I'm here.
And Rich, I'm going to let you kind of do this because you know more about the game than I do.
Yeah, so in preparation of Cobb being away for the week, we decided we were trying to plan and plot out a nice evergreen episode we could record early, as you hear us already saying, so that we can have it cut and edited and ready to go so that it can just post on the Wednesday or Thursday, whatever day normally we post. And so we decided amongst all of us to play the new beta test of Critical Role and Darrington Press's new tabletop RPG called Daggerheart. So we personally played Daggerheart version 1.2. It is their beta playtest. It's available for free online. You just download and print out all the material. It gives you a module that you can play through with pre-made characters. So we didn't really get into character creation per se, and we didn't really do much of the leveling. We just went into playing the game itself and the mechanics and the system.
Mm-hmm.
We did do the whole playthrough of their little storyline that they added of their quick start adventure, which I don't think it actually had a name. The Sablewood Messengers, maybe, is what it was called. We did go through that, and I'll be honest right here, right now. Like, I didn't read through too much of it. I glazed through it. I DM'd the game. These two guys, they played it. And so, like, I glazed through it. There was a little bit of ambiguity when it came to the rules that were in the playtest adventure guide, the quick start adventure. The rules were a little bit ambiguous. They weren't very direct. There were some rules in there that just weren't very straightforward that I think they need to work on and add to it. For instance, like movement distance. They don't get into like a character speed or movement range in the playtest, but for the most part, every character starts within a range close enough to where it shouldn't really become a big issue. But beyond like the whole playtest, we tried out the whole system, and I personally had a good time. I really enjoyed the system. But like, what do you guys think of the system?
I thought it was interesting. I didn't have a bad time with it. Like this stuff is not generally like my whole deal. But I thought like some of the stuff that they did, I thought actually worked really well, and in ways like from what I know of D&D, like better than D&D. Mm-hmm. I like the dice concept in this one a little bit more. The just you roll the 2 12s and like you kind of get like point, not points, but you get the hope or the fear out of that.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into the system in general in a moment, but I want to hear Drew's opinion and thoughts.
I mean, I liked what we played. As someone who struggles with a little more of the role playing aspect in D&D, I liked the times where it did kind of prompt you to ask us things about the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually cool.
That was something that was built into the adventure guide and how the game is built up. The game is kind of built up like a cooperative world building system, and it is more on the lines of a role play system and less on the lines of like a battle system. There is battle to it, there is combat to it, just like in every game system. But this one leads more for being I kept saying when we were playing a heroic, more sort of like more heroic kind of characters, but it lends it to being just more cinematic is probably the better example, where you scenarios come up and you tell me what you want to do and you try to be more of the hero and more of like the action hero. This is a fantasy world system. Like, it's more based in fantasy, not really modern day, which obviously, you would expect Critical Role to do fantasy. That's what they do. And they already have their other they have their other game, Candela Obscura, out, which is more based on, that's Eldritch Horror and Lovecraftian, but more modern and people aspect. This is fantasy. But yeah, the game system itself is the dice system. It's not like a D20 where like you have with D&D, and it's not an exploding die that you have in Outbreak Undead. What this is, they call it a duality die. And so you get two D12s, you label, you announce or you just say like one is hope and one is fear. You roll the two die, whichever one rolled higher, that's what you rolled with, but you combine those two amounts. And you add any of your bonuses on your sheet and any other bonuses you would have had. You combine it all and you let me know. So say you were trying to roll a 10 and you roll a 12, but your higher number, say you rolled an 8 with your fear die and a 4 with your hope die, you rolled a 12 with fear. That means that the DM gets to add a fear token or gets to give you a point of stress or gets to enact some sort of like, quote, revenge, I guess, or pseudo revenge on the players. Not really revenge, but it's the best word I could come up with at the moment. The DM can enact some sort of fear-based action on the players or take a fear token to be used in combat or later on. But if you succeed, that's a success with fear, which means you still succeeded, but it might not have gone your way. If you succeed with hope, the players get a hope token and it's a full success. If you fail with hope, the players get a hope token, but you still failed, just not as bad. If you fail with fear, it's a complete fail. You completely, utterly failed. The DM gets a fail token or gets to use that fail fear for however. I kept giving them stress, and most of the times they rolled with fear. When it came to role play, I would give them a little bit of stress. Or if it came to combat, I would take the fear token, because combat, you can use the fear tokens for some of the enemies. But it is a very interesting system. I like the idea of not just strictly rolling a d20. And I like the give and take of like, oh, fear versus hope. Like, how good is this? Or how like, it gives that option of a mediocre success. Which, yeah. I like that idea. Like, you don't get that in D&D.
Yeah. The one thing I will say as far as the kind of like combat and everything went, it was skewed poorly for a small group, which we all mentioned a couple times while just going through it. It played fine, but like some of those combat scenarios were definitely set up in such a way where it's like, yeah, this is definitely meant for a group of 3, 4, 5 players.
Mm-hmm.
And just two of us at the level we were at. Had Richie not playing it the way he did, we would have just died probably in like the first combat scenario.
I pulled my punches. I purposely pulled my punches because I wanted to get through the whole game scenario to get a full experience of it. I definitely could have gone a little bit harder, but it was after the first round. So the problem is, and like maybe I should have lightened this up, or like had I known the balancing was maybe going to be a little bit off, I would have like changed it up, maybe taken out one of the enemies, or not had used full force of the ambush action. There was a whole ambush scenario that happened, and that's why the first combat was that difficult, because those enemies got that first move on you guys. The three enemies got that first attack on you guys. If you would have not have been ambushed, you would have gotten that first action. And that's really the only reason that combat was that difficult. But I do agree, like, the enemies hit hard.
Yeah, at least no, that was more the issue.
or at least I was rolling to hit hard. They have the
opportunity to hit very hard, which isn't too bad if you can potentially have it spread out across 3 or 4 people.
Yeah,
right.
But in our setup, like, you immediately have one of us had to be Marlo, the mage, which generally your casting types are going to be long range. So realistically, they're not going to be the target for very long. And that's kind of how it worked out for us. Like, I moved away, Drew being, were you a rogue or a ranger? I forget.
The rogue. I was the rogue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being the rogue, like, your only ability to attack is to attack at close range. So it's very much all right, well, you're in the thick of it now, and because the enemies are all kind of right there, they're all kind of in a position to just attack you and not really me.
Yeah. And unfortunately, because Cobb wasn't in the middle of the combat, and there was Drew wasn't getting a lot of advantage, he wasn't able to do a lot of like the sneak attack shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what rogues need. And so like maybe if you were to pick the warrior class or I guess Guardian might be considered the pseudo barbarian or something. Like if you had picked one of the other characters, maybe you would have been in more of a shape to be that full frontal attacker and take that full damage. But I mean, it's not your fault. You picked a character that sounded cool to you. You wanted to be a frog guy. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
That is absolutely not against the rule set of the game. That's just this scenario or adventure or whatever it's called. Like it is set up for quick play, but it's like definitely balanced. It is balanced in such a way where it would probably be a light challenge for a full group. It was a steep challenge for just two players.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going into it with like Drew, you're actually like experienced at like these sorts of games in general. I'm not. I don't play them. Like they're not my thing. So like for me, like there was a lot of stuff where like I think I did okay, but I wasn't really sure what I was doing in a lot of cases.
I'll be 100% honest, and this has been a tweet I've been struggling whether or not I want to post. Stop complaining about how people play a tabletop RPG. You did great. Whether or not you failed or succeeded, you did great. You played the game how you would play. You did great. Don't worry about that.
Well, so yeah. I think more what I meant was like recognizing what stuff I can and can't do, like as far as like what was on the character sheets. Like,
yeah, and I said it when we were playing. I struggled remembering those things too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there were definitely probably a couple of abilities that you guys could have utilized. I didn't read the character sheets, so I didn't know what abilities you had. I went into this almost just as blind as you guys did, with just a little bit of prior knowledge based on watching their one shot and how to play videos, and that was about it.
There weren't that many abilities, especially for me. Like there weren't really any other abilities I didn't use. I used everything except I think there was one ability I never used because it was really the one thing I didn't use is my ability to the rogue's advantage on lockpicking because that just didn't happen.
There was no lockpicking in this scenario.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like I had one ability too that I didn't use.
Three abilities I used.
Yeah.
Or I had.
But yeah, to talk about the enemies hitting hard, let's get into that real quick. The way the damage system works in this game is every character, every enemy has a set level of damage thresholds. So I believe for both of you, it was like 3, 7, and 9 or something like that. I don't want...
No, mine was 5... Or no, sorry, that's 1, 2, 2, 2. Mine was 4, 9, 14.
4, 9, and 14. Marlo's was 3, 8, and 13. And
I was gonna say they were similar.
Yeah. And so what that means is your minor threshold is 3 and above, your major threshold is 8 and above, and your severe threshold is 13 and above. So if you take between 3 and 7 damage, you're marking 1 HP slot or 1 HP damage, 1 point of HP damage. If you take under 3 points of damage, You just mark a stress mark. And if you max out your stress, then every time you take a stress, you take a hit point damage. Which is a little bit of a funky system. I feel like, personally, if you max out your stress, you take one more, you take an HP, and that should clear your stress. That's my opinion, because there are abilities that utilize your stress. I think, Drew, your invisibility ability?
It seemed like all abilities cost you stress.
So if you're gonna if you have two separate health pools and one of them doesn't empty when it fill, if one of them is like, oh, once you hit this point you take an HP, that means that basically takes away your ability to use that action. It's cool. Action economy that makes sense, but at the same time, like
limit your ability. Like,
yeah,
to,
like
to have it be I could use this ability or die or just do I guess my whole turn is I can just do a basic attack.
Yeah.
Like not cool.
But, like, Cobb, I believe some of his abilities didn't have a stress use. So like,
only one of my ability had stress. So, and it's, I have, so the Marlo was a sorceress, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had one ability that we never got to use because it required a long rest. And that was a trance that basically lets you get rid of like stress and HP and everything. The one that took stress was Primal Origin, which that was the one that I could extend the reach of an attack, add two to an action roll, reroll damage dice, or hit an additional target within range with the spell. That was just any, I could pick any one of those four things, but it took a stress to do that. My other two were mostly not hope. Okay, so one of them was hope related. So Rain of Blades was that like big AoE attack. That was just, I had to spend two of my own hope to cast it.
Yeah.
And then I had Unleash Chaos, which comes preloaded with two uses, basically. And it's for every one of those two charges you use, you get to roll a D10. So you can do one at a time, or you can just go big and do both of them.
But you could mark a stress to refill that once you use the two, because you can't use that ability after you use the two.
So here's the thing that I couldn't find in the rules and was very confused about really how it worked, is also once you use the abilities, so your characters, it seems like you can eventually have up to five abilities equipped, essentially. Mm-hmm. Once you use an ability, it then is supposed to essentially be discarded, and then you have to pay some amount of stress to get the card back into your deck.
And see, that, and again, I think that leads a little into the ambiguity of the starter guide, the quick start adventure. That didn't say anything about that.
No, exactly. The only spot it says anything about that is where on the cards for each character it has like this recall cost, and it says cards can be taken out of your loadout and put into the vault, which makes them inactive. And then it was like, so when we use it, do we have to pull it back out? Like, I was like, I don't understand what this means.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember seeing that too and being like, I don't, why would I do this? Like, what good is this one?
Yeah. And so, unfortunately, like, I didn't get around to, like, reading in full the,
I mean, it's fucking 300-something pages.
What that means, read. It's 300 pages. Like, we were playtesting this. If I were sitting down to dedicate more time to actually learn the game fully to play it, I would absolutely spend the time to learn that. I do know that at a certain point you get to restack the cards that you have, so maybe that has something to do with it, where you do have more than the cards that are allowed in your hand or something. I don't 100% know. And so maybe that's more of like the resetting your prepared spells kind of situation.
That's actually what I was thinking about. Like it read kind of like that, like creating your loadout like between things. Because it does say during a long rest you can do it, or between long rests. So it's like every time you long rest, you get those abilities back and can but you know what, like, for what it's worth, like, I like, this is a beta and they do just offer everything for free. Like, we did that quick start thing, and frankly, like, Drew and I for sure spent no time researching. Like, I read through the opening page and through like my character's sheet, and that was kind of it. But, like, opening up some of the other stuff, like, I saw that, you know, it's got the full rule book, or at least, like, the current, like, version of the full rule book that, yeah, like you guys said, is 300 pages or something crazy like that. It's got specific GM material with all the different stuff. It's got character creation guides, a play guide, starting equipment, like, all the stuff to, like, make the game. And then it's got all of the individual character sheets for you to make a character from scratch and not use the pre-built ones. So, like, in if we weren't doing the pre-built thing, or even doing the pre-built thing, like, if Drew had, like, been like, oh, yeah, I'm really into this, and had read a bunch of it, he could have gone in here and, like, made himself, like, a frog person that was a guardian or something. and just rolled with that because the only character that mattered for the quick start was the sorceress. Like, she was the only one that had to be part of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool that they're giving you everything they have right now. Like, it's like, this isn't official. It's 1.2. Like, that's where we're at. Like play it, break it, see what's wrong with it. Tell us what you think needs to be done.
Yeah. So I just did a little bit of looking up while you were talking. The recall cost comes into play when you reach level 5 and beyond, because you'll have more than 5 cards. You can only have 5 cards in your hand. You'll have more than 5 cards. While on an adventure, freely, you can expend that stress to swap out that card with another card. However, on downtime, like during a short or long rest, you can switch that out in a different way.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure prepare, describe, prepare, for eventually you'll gain hope. If you choose to prepare with one or more members, you gain 2 hope. But yeah, so it's probably just if you're taking a short rest, you can swap out freely. But otherwise, you expend that stress, you swap out what you have on there with whatever it is, if you want to do that freely. So it has nothing to do with anything we did. We did that.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I did check that. So yeah, it's a new system. It's a lot of there's a lot of interesting devices in it, and I am very much interested to play it. I want to play it. I don't want to be a DM for it. I want to find somebody who's trying to run games for this, because it is something that I want to try to get into, because the game is more, it's more roleplay. It's more cinematic. It's more build the adventure and build the world together. As you were saying, Drew, like when it comes to D&D, you're a lot about the numbers. You're a lot about, like, you're a lot about the just build the strongest character, whereas this leans more into, like, pushing that roleplay aspect more in this game. And that's what I'm excited for, is to try to push that roleplay aspect, to try to get the players to build upon characters. Like, my favorite thing was, at one point, the enemies did an attack on you, and I just told you, make up your character's greatest fear, and explain that to me.
Oh, was that not actually the ability? Like, did it just tell you to, like...
That was the ability. The ability was, but the enemy, let me pull up the ability. It was memory delve. Spend fear to make an attack roll against a close target. On success, the forest wraith flies into melee and places their hand upon the target's cheek. Ask the player to describe a terrifying moment from the character's childhood, then deal the damage. So that was, and then you are then also vulnerable until the next rest, which this again leads to the ambiguity of the playtest material, or at least of the quick start. It doesn't tell me what vulnerable means.
Yeah, it did not have anything about status effects.
So then, like, you had to go into and search in the DM guide content, like, what does vulnerability mean? Like, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't remember what it was.
If I remember correctly, no, I actually don't think it really had an effect, except for there are certain abilities that will do something if you're vulnerable.
Yeah, my character had an ability like that.
Into different statuses, like prone or things like that, depending on what the ability was, like something that would, whatever would make sense. So for like the memory delve, there's kind of, you know, maybe you're a little dazed or something for a bit, but it wouldn't necessarily like knock you down or whatever. But then, yeah, like Cobb had an ability that did bonus damage against vulnerable enemies.
Yeah, the way the thing reads, so the little tooltip next to the card is, vulnerable is a condition in the game. If a creature is vulnerable, a roll against them has advantage. But so the one spell, Rain of Blades, has the bottom line is, if any target you hit are currently vulnerable, they take an additional 2d10 magic damage.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's right. I would have had advantage on attack rolls against you, but that's when we started. It was near the end, and like I started trying to push, like, let's wrap it up. And I was trying to push the one of the really cool aspects of this game is they have team attacks, where one person spends 3 hope And you can, once per session, that person can activate a team attack with any one, or I don't know if it's any number or just one other player, but with at least one, with one other player of on the table. And so, like, since we were playing with the two of yous, Kav could activate one, and then Drew could activate one. And that is a team attack that both of you roll. You take the better roll. It's not necessarily the highest roll. You take the better roll, because, say, you needed a 15 to hit, and Cobb, you rolled a 15 with hope, but Drew, you rolled a 17 with fear. You're gonna want to take the hope. But I also say you have a fear and a hope, and you don't know what you need to roll, but you decide to go with the hope. You both get a piece of hope for that, but you miss. But at least I don't get the fear. So you play with that aspect so that this way you only take what the better roll is.
Yeah, not I think
the highest roll.
I think in that case, though, we ended up taking the higher roll, which was a fear roll, because we knew that would be enough to end the combat encounter.
Yeah.
And like that was just a thing where like that combat in particular had essentially a timer. That was just, it was based on the amount of enemies defeated or the amount of times that the NPC took damage.
Yeah.
So it was just like, well, we need to just take out two of these things. We know that their attack, like how much damage they can take, because we've taken out a bunch already. So like, we just need the higher roll. Like we don't need the hope. We need the better roll.
You just need to make sure you can hit and kill at least one more thing. And so then that where it, again, it feeds into the role playing aspect and like the yes ending of a tabletop RPG, the why can't I remember the term? The improv of a tabletop RPG is like, all right, now you guys tell me what this is and we'll roll with it and make it work. And so you guys wanted to use a certain ability. You both wanted to use some of your abilities to make it work together. And I might have stretched the limitations of what this team attack would have been, but it's cool. And that's kind of the point of the game. Like, this is really cool. This is a cool idea. So you wanted to use your big AoE at this largest range to hit everything, and you wanted to also somehow work together to hit everything as well. So, like, we did some sort of fucking Naruto shit where you did your shadow teleportation and used the shadow underneath the blades to stab everything and teleport to each. It was awesome. It was a great combo. And, like, that's like, some of the fun that this game system seems like it's going to have.
Yeah, and, like, you even rolled with that in that first combat where I'm like, I just want to try and lure the fucking wolf thing into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just like, well, okay, but like you also didn't make it just an immediate like, okay, well, like you lured them in and now they're attacking everybody. Like you made sure it made sense. Like,
yeah,
I had to work with making it aggressive.
Yeah, and that's a little bit in the hands of being a GM in general. Is like to me a GM's job is rule of cool. It's not to be a stickler for the rules. There is nothing in the rule book that says what happens if the players try to lure the wolf or the enemy in to help fight. There's nothing in there. I got to figure out how to make that fun. I got to figure out if you're going to use an action economy to do this, I got to figure out how this would work. And so, yeah, unfortunately, it took a round or two for it to fully work, just because thematically it would make sense. Figuring out how it would make sense. To me, the wolf knows how many kids it has, and so it wouldn't seeing this random baby wolf out there probably would have known, oh, that's not my baby. But then seeing it be attacked, then it was like, okay, now that's a thing. So it took you two rounds to figure that out, but I made it work. It's just the one thing about how this game system works when it comes to combat,
I think, is, you're about to say what I was about to mention.
Yeah, there's no initiative order.
Yeah,
so it goes players and DM, basically players and then enemies. And so there's no rule on if a third party like helper comes in. Should I bring them in as an ally? Should I bring them in as a player? So I just gave them their own turn. I gave the Strix Wolf, which was a wolf, owl wolf basically, I gave it its own turn after the enemy's turn. It came in and did some fighting. But it's a really cool combat system because the players can take as many actions as they can until one of them fails or rolls with fear. And so every time they take an action, no matter what the action is, once they fail a roll, they place a an action token on a card, and once they fail a roll with fear, then it comes to the DM, who then gets to use as many action tokens as they have to activate once per character. So, like, if there's four enemies on the field, and I have five action tokens, I can use four of them to activate all four of the enemies once.
That's where I don't 100% know, I feel, if that's good or not. Like, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, well, we've done four actions, there's four enemies. Well, we can just essentially keep going.
Yeah.
Like, limitlessly.
Yeah.
With no negative... There is no consequence to taking extra turns at that point. Which no, but that's is kind of cool, but also, like, I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing or not.
Yeah, I feel like the limitation of how many activations each enemy can have is a little off, because again, like you said, it's if you guys take four actions and I only have four enemies, and you guys take six actions, I still can only take four.
Yeah. Like, there were some things with the fear you could spend in other battles.
Yeah,
and maybe bigger enemies will do more with being able to spend the fear, but...
And I think, and it, again, it doesn't go into it in the playtest, in the quick guide, but I think, like, maybe I could have used fear to take a random action throughout. But again, that's using a fear and not using an action token.
Right. But, well, I think there was a thing where it was like, if you spent two fear, you could interrupt us.
Yeah, there might
but
be.
Again, like, yeah, like
that wasn't listed in like the actual like learn starter's guide.
I thought I saw that in the starter guide stuff.
I don't remember seeing it. But like there is that level of give and take when it comes to actions, because one of your actions could potentially just be moving to the enemies. That is
so actually broken. No, it's not.
Well, you would have to. Well, it's not an action to run, but you would have to with a certain distance. You would have to roll your die, and if you roll with fear, it then becomes my turn. So that's again where the give and take comes. Is like, all right, well, if you need to move long range to get to an enemy to fight, you're going to have to roll your die to pass an agility check.
Right.
And if you fail that agility check, well, you still, to me, it means that you, or if you've passed with fear, you get there, but it's my turn. If you fail that ability check, you don't make it quite as far, and it's my turn.
But again, like, at the same time, if like that was the first thing we did, okay, cool, you get one action back, yeah, and then it's back to our turn. And, like, I don't necessarily know that the action economy is great, how I feel about that. So, I mean, it could, you know, it's hard to say.
As someone that doesn't play those all that often, I liked it only because it was strictly, it was like 100% just chance, really. Like, I feel like a lot of times when you're playing like D&D, like when you're rolling to see if you hit somebody, there's so many things you have to like remember, like as you're not just for hitting people, just like as you're playing. Like, it's all like, what am I adding to this? What am I not adding to this? Is there advantage? Is there disadvantage? Like all that stuff. When it comes to just pass or fail for those things, it's just you roll the dice, whichever one is higher is basically whether you passed or failed.
Well, that's that's totally not the case.
D&D is more pass and fail. This is a lot more open to the
pass
and fail. Pass and fail isn't the right word, but like you're either you're the good dice is higher and you keep going, or the bad dice is higher and your turn's over. Like there's no anything to those dice at that point.
It's the entire team's turn is over. So
and that's the thing. It could be that your good dice is higher, but you still missed. You get that hope, but it's my turn now. Like, that's why it's a little bit more broad than just pass or fail, because, yes, in the end, it's still a mostly 50-50 chance that of whether or not it's going to work. But I mean, I guess if for a counter, we were playing a two PC game. If there was four PCs, there might be rounds where somebody doesn't get a turn because somebody
for sure.
Failed. There might be rounds where like I think it lies a little bit more in the quick start adventure and a little bit less in the actual openness of the game, whereas like the quick start adventure, everything starts close.
Sure. The thing I will say, and you know, not necessarily an issue for any group of us, but an issue I can see with that whole mechanic is some groups having some people that want to be far more active and engaged, especially in combat, that like if the DM is not good about being like, no, you fucking did shit already.
Yeah.
Somebody else has to go. I can see this whole like, oh, well, player one went and did a thing. Player two did a thing, but failed. So now it's the DM's turn. So now it goes back to the players. Player one, who's wants to be super fully engaged, just immediately goes again.
Yeah.
And takes over the game because there's nothing stopping them from doing that, as opposed to having a traditional turn order where it's like, okay, no, it's now this player's turn.
And I guess like a workaround would be to add an initiative order of sorts to the players themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Still keep it with the two different sides, because to me, I like having the player side and character and enemy side. I like having the two separate, and I like the idea that there's a potential that I as a DM might not get an action the entire combat because you guys are just that epic.
Yeah, like there's definitely something cool to be said about that.
Yeah, like I like that idea, and I like having it just like you guys go, then I go, because I feel like it also helps with the flow of combat. Because instead of it being like, oh, well, Drew goes, and then enemy number one goes, and then Cobb goes, and then enemy number three and four goes, and then player number three goes, and then enemy number four goes, and then player five, six, and seven go, or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it helps with the flow of combat, where it's just, it makes it a little bit more rapid. Combat still took long, but that was us learning the combat.
Right.
I feel like combat might be in this game a little bit quicker than in D&D, because, look, D&D combat takes so fucking long.
It doesn't necessarily have to, though.
Drew, in every D&D campaign I've been in, there have been people that have argued about rules and argued about things and questioning, or would wait until their turn to figure out what they're going to do. You're right. You're 100% right.
I 100% agree that it does. I'm just saying it doesn't have to. Yeah.
You're 100% right that it doesn't have to. But because of the way a turn-based system works, there are a lot of people that don't pay attention until it's their turn, ask what happened up until their turn, don't look at their cards until their turn, figure out their turn.
I don't know that the system they've come up with in this solves that issue, though.
It might not. I feel like it does.
If anything, I feel like it almost makes it worse, has the potential to make it worse.
I feel like it might lead to pushing more interactivity, especially with the group combos, but also just more paying attention due to the fact that there is no strict turn order. If somebody fails, then it's the DM's turn. And so you need to understand what's going on at all times. I feel like it might lead to that. Again, our sample size is a two PC game. That's not very common in tabletop RPG spaces to have a two PC game. So we were able to stick on it. We also kind of pushed through a little bit harder and faster because we needed to be done at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, I don't know. I feel like you're right. It could cause for chaos, but it could also cause for a little bit more streamline. And
maybe
the chaos part is on the, if when it comes to the chaos of having that one character, that one player who wants to capitalize every round, that's then on the players and the DM to conversate and figure out, hey, everyone needs to take a turn.
Yeah,
like everyone needs to have their chance to get an action in.
I don't disagree, but I like just at least from what we know of, without having dived deep into the whole full manual, like, I can see that being more of an issue in this because of the way it seems to be.
Yeah.
So it's just something that will take a more experienced DM and group to be like, yeah, no, dude, what are you doing? Let them have a turn. Stop trying to take over everything.
Yeah. And then there might be the people that sit there and, like, a healing spell might cost you an action token. And there's going to be people out there that be like, well, you just wasted this action. I could have attacked. And it's like, well, look, everyone has to play. Everyone gets a turn. But again, I think that also pushes into this being less of a combat-oriented system and more of a role-play system.
I was about to say that, like, I feel like the idea with this one is more of a, you should be collaborating with the group more than just when it's the player turn, just people taking turns. Like, yes, like, there is going to be that, but it's one of those, like, all right, well, like, who's got an idea of something to do? Like, how can we make this make the most sense? Like, is anyone low on health? Should we do something to get health back first for this person? Like, do we want to let them, like, they're up close, they're better far away. Do we want to let them do a roll to, like, get the fuck out of there first before we try and do anything else? Because, again, like, unless you fail the roll, like, you're going to get to do the thing. Like, I don't think, true, did we actually fail a roll at all other than, like, armor stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure one of us at least missed on an attack.
But I meant, like, was there anything that we did that wasn't, like, an attack that we failed on, I guess is a better way to put it. Like, did either of us be like, oh, well, I want to try this thing, and Richie had us roll, and, like, we just failed?
You guys failed a few times. Okay.
I couldn't remember.
Drew failed climbing the tree once.
Right.
You rolled a critical when it came to figuring out the rock. You guys failed the perception for the ambush, which is why the ambush happened.
Right.
You guys failed a few checks, but it again led to, like, when it comes to the playtest material in and of itself, there wasn't a lot of, you didn't have a lot of persuasion checks or a lot of other skill checks happening in this game.
Right.
There, like, once we got out of the ambush, it was more open-ended and, like, just conversating and role-playing with the NPCs that you run into.
Yeah, I will say, as far as, like, that stuff went, I feel like, and not even a feel, this very much ended in a way where it's like, okay, this is actually supposed to be part of, like, a longer campaign adventure book sort of thing. But I feel like this opening one, really good as, like, a playtest, like, get a concept for it.
Mm-hmm.
But not a good, this is the first part of a thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it was weak in a lot of other places. Like, setup was weak. NPC kind of stuff was weak. And that's not Richie's fault. Like, just what was given to him in the material was just weaker because it wasn't supposed to be a long form thing.
Yeah. Like, for instance, when you guys got to the town, and it talks about, like, walking into the town and there's that pop of energy and it gets louder. It does not tell, at least the DM, anything about that until you get about what that pop was, until you get to the Archmage, who then explains it to you. I think that's when you found out, like, the truth about, like, that pop and that feeling that you got when you went into the city. Also, when it came to figuring out who to talk to, and this was a little bit me not having fully read through, but it's like, it gives me a list of three NPCs, which to a DM, when I have a list of three NPCs, it's optional for you guys to see, to speak to. I don't pick a NPC. They're out in the world. You find them. And so I said, like, in the town square that you were at, there's the three NPCs. And then it's like, it told me, pick one, they meet that NPC. Strictly, they meet that NPC. That NPC takes you to the bar where you pick one of the others, and they meet that NPC at the bar. And that's just too much railroading. That's too much pushing, where it's like, and one of the NPCs was a fucking child. 10 years old that you're going to meet at a bar. Like, that was a little, little silly. Like, it just, to me, there's an entire page of material in this that I didn't read. I think it's at least a page or two of material that I didn't read.
And so I feel like that's probably common for some of these, like, modules when you get to more of the...
Actually, like, a lot. It's half a page. There's a whole page about the tavern and how the second floor looks and information about the tavern. So then for you to find out, I pick another random one of these three NPCs and you just happen to go to them and talk to them. Which, to me, that's when you're writing material for players to go meet characters and you want them to get specific information, it's okay to have one specific character have that information, but it's not okay, in my opinion, to force that encounter. The players need to make that encounter happen. And so, just to me, the wording of it, where it's like, if the players would like to talk to an NPC, you can choose one of the options below. Obviously, the players are going to want to talk. What are the players going to do? What are they going to do other than talk to an NPC? And it's during their discussion, choose an additional NPC from the list above. The second will be a friend that has knowledge of where the Whitefire Arcanist lives. They last saw this person at the tavern and sends you in its direction. So it's like, okay, we're going to meet a child. You could meet a child outside, which would have made sense. The child was in awe and curious of people who come to the village, loves outsiders. So it would make sense that the child would run up to you guys and be like, hi guys, how you doing? I want to get to know you. I want to get to know the new people. And then you would be like, do you know anybody who can lead us to the Arcanist? And it's like, well, you can go to the tavern. There should be somebody there that could help you. That would make a little bit more sense. But to me, that's too railroady.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But so, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't aren't the adventure guides in D&D, the here's your campaign in a book things? A lot of that is more guidelines. You don't have to necessarily do every little thing, because a lot of it comes down to what the players end up latching on to. It's just there to give you the options and give you kind of ideas on
what
might happen.
I can't think of any of the books right now. None of them come to mind right now. But yeah, in those, they build out the world for you. They give you a starting point, and they give you, for the most part, a reason why they're there. And then once you usually finish the starting thing, it's when it opens up a little bit more. At least that's how, we did The Lost Mines of Phandalin, which is the D&D starting guide. And it's like, it gives you a reason why everyone's together and why you're already on an adventure when you get together. And you get to a certain point, and then from there, it's like, all right, well, you can go talk to these people. You can go try this. You can go try that. You can go here. You can go there. And it gives you options of where to go. And, it'll give you guides hey, we need help with this, or hey, we need help with that. But it's not like you don't have to do that. But it's just to me, it felt weird that it was pick one of these NPCs, and then they'll go to the tavern and you pick another one. And not tell me where the NPCs are in the town. It felt a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little odd. But overall, at least I, as much as I ever have fun with this stuff, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the armor rating stuff yet for the combat, which I thought was a cool thing as well. To me, it actually makes armor kind of more useful. But every character, depending on what armor they're wearing, has an armor class, which they have evasion is what I have to roll above to hit them. And then they have their armor class, which they can mark off one of their boxes of armor. And it looks like you can have up to 9 armor boxes.
Oh,
armor
that's
class boxes.
I was thinking, isn't that just the same as D&D? I forgot about the armor, to negate things.
Yeah. So in D&D, it's just armor. Your armor class is how much I have to roll over to hit you.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's you have your evasion, which is your armor class essentially. And then your armor, you can then use one of your armor boxes, check that off, and you subtract your armor rating from the damage you took. So say you took 5 damage, or let's go with say you took 6 damage. And you already had a lot of HP dealt to you, and you can't take any more health damage. you can use your armor class. That'll drop that 6 to a 1 that's below your minor threshold, and that is only a stress mark. Or if you have, if you took over 13 damage, say you took 14 damage, which would be your severe, which would take, you would take 2 HP, you mark one of your armor slots, it drops your 14 to a 9. Yeah, to a 9, which is your major armor, major damage threshold, you only take 2 HP instead of 3.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
That's another thing where I'm like, I don't 100% know how I feel about that compared to just how D&D does it. Kind of 6-1, half dozen the other. I'm totally fine with how they do it. Could see maybe wanting a little more HP.
Well, I mean, you get more HP as the game goes on. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, I mean,
there's 6 unchecked boxes on Marlowe's, and I'm going to assume that your minor, major, and severe damage thresholds may increase as you level up as well. Start at 3, 8, and 13. I'm going to assume they get higher.
Yeah, it does seem like, I feel like if this used a more traditional like HP pool, then that the armor stuff wouldn't make as much sense. But I think because of the way that it does damage in HP and all, it actually works really well.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to handle it.
Yeah, and Rich, you went into it earlier, but the whole idea where you roll your damage dice, like you're like 1d8, and mm-hmm. you hit and you roll an 8, that's not 8 damage, like that's not 8 hit points.
Yeah.
That is just, it's telling you which threshold of hit points you're getting.
Well, it's you took eight damage, and how much of a injury is that? That's a major injury, or that's a minor injury, or that's severe. So, like, it's the difference between like a minor injury would be like a quick nip, the tip of the sword hit you, whereas a major injury would be a long slash across your arm, and severe would be a stab right into your gut or something like that.
Yeah, and that's where being able to use that like that armor, it's like, okay, well, yes, it was a major like thrust, but I have armor, so, you know, it actually didn't go in, it just kind of cut my side open.
Yeah, and like, maybe that probably goes a little on to me. I didn't lean into that as a storytelling aspect as much either. I didn't lean into, like, I would tell you how much damage you take, and once I found out how much damage you did, I would just be like, alright, mark off however much, and I didn't lean into that as to what the damage was to, like, to push more of the storytelling.
But I mean, that's also one of those, if you were running this as like a long form game, that stuff would end up coming in more, but doing it for the first time, like not really familiar with the rules and stuff yourself, it's definitely more of a learning experience all the way around.
Yeah. So, being everyone's first time playing. Like, if I had played this prior, I would have been more understanding, but like I said, my only prior knowledge was the How to Play video and their one shot that they did. Not even their session zero. I was just straight up just their one shot.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I didn't even watch that much.
Yeah. But yeah, I had a good time playing it. It is definitely, I'm going to keep my eye on it. And like, maybe if there's another time, as time goes on, if there's another time that we're going to need to pre-record or anything, we could figure out potentially to play this or other games, because we do have plenty of games from PAX that we still have to play, guys, that we have to figure out how to play and talk about and put on here. So yeah, this was a good game. I would say it's good. I'm not going to say it's great. I'm not going to say it's amazing. I would say it was very good, and it definitely needs some work, especially in like the rules writing area, especially for the quick start guide. It needs a little bit more explanation on certain features, but I think it can definitely get better.
Just quickly be a little more specific on some of the things that need to be rewritten potentially, is there was ambiguity about targeting and like how many you could target on some things, where it was like versus all or things like that.
The language was just a little too, and it was one of those just, like, yes, like we could have just rolled with it, be like, well, here's how it sounds like, so let's just do this every time. But right. Then it's like, well, this is worded slightly different too.
Yeah, and we still needed to establish, okay, well, this going to run it versus it just being like, okay, yes, this is very clear what it says.
Yes. For instance, there are skeletons that in the final combat, there are skeletons that activate that it states group attack. Spend fear and activate every skeleton within close range of a target to move into melee with them, dealing 5 damage each. So that's where, again, that's where like we're trying to figure out, does that mean every skeleton on the board moves closer, moves to a character they are close to? Or do I pick a character and every skeleton within close range move closer to them?
Right.
Like the ability is a good ability if I want to just do some instant damage because it's spending a fear and it's not using an action token. It's not activating an action token. It's just straight up spending a fear to do that and mm-hmm. deals damage. But again, it's like, to me, I would want to do this. I would want to activate, because it's called group attack. I would want to activate a group. So if I'm spending a fear and only activating one, it's spend a fear and activate every skeleton, which to me means I would be spending an action token for each skeleton I activate. So, but it's an automatic 5 damage. So at minimum, or at maximum, it would be an automatic minor injury. At minimum, it's an automatic stress mark on you guys. But if it's talking strictly every close range next to one character, then it's like, all right, well, spending a fear doesn't make sense to use this. But if it's every skeleton in the area goes to the closest character, then it's like, all right, then spending the fear makes sense. But it was a back and forth on that. Like, I wasn't really sure what that meant.
Yeah, because you could easily take it either way. Whereas opposed to if they wrote it, choose a character, all skeletons within close range of that character move in and deal 5 damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I think all in all, if I were going to if I were like a pen and paper RPG person, like I would be willing to like play this more.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to, but I like if someone's like, "Hey, we're going to try this new game," and like it was something I was into, I'd be like, "Okay, yeah. Like sure. I will do that more."
I'm totally down to try it. There's a bunch of like cool races, playable races in this game. There's the frog people, there's cat people, there's humans, there's fungus people, like spore people. There's a bunch of playable races. There's a bunch of like cool playable races that like I'm super super into. I'm like super excited to like try different characters. I just want to run around and be a fungus person. There's like robot people, demon people.
It did have a lot of variety for that stuff. I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it like it also like I know there's some people out there that would hate this, but it's very inclusive. One of the things that it asks you on your character sheet is pronouns. And even there's one of the starter characters that is non-binary, and one of the little kid that you guys could have run into was also non-binary. So like that's Critical Role trying to be very inclusive. They have a very inclusive company over there, but it's just like they do push for inclusivity in this game,
which like that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. You need to include everyone. You need to include everyone.
Yeah, and like there are good ways to do that and bad ways, and I don't think this is a bad way. Like no, it's not forcing anything. Like it's all up to the person, as it should be.
Oh, look, people got mad at Starfield because it asked pronouns. So you know,
no, believe me, I get it. People get mad at that stuff. I was just simply saying, like, no one's being forced to do anything. So, like, you know, just have fun. Like it's that simple.
but they is a singular. I can't have fun anymore.
What was it with Starfield? Right. Oh, it's it breaks immersion. It breaks immersion. I'll never forget that. There was a YouTuber around when Starfield came out. He was playing Starfield and he was in the character creator. Now y'all know how very, very immersive the Bethesda character creators are, right? It's fucking menus. It's menus. Especially in Starfield. it's a menu. It's not like anything special. And so his immersion that got broken was a menu that asked his pronouns.
Yeah,
it's so immersion breaking. It's so immersion breaking. But then and I didn't I made this equivalent when I talked about this on Brose. You can go to Baldur's Gate that has your character creator, and you can pick pronouns. It asks you your pronouns, and then it actually lets you pick your genitalia. So you mm-hmm. can have a he, him with a vulva. You can have a she, her with a wiener. You can
I think Cyberpunk does that too.
Yep.
Yeah. You could just. I heard no complaints about Baldur's Gate.
Oh, there were plenty. Don't worry.
Yeah, there were.
But Starfield, this one dude, I'll never forget it. He's like, it breaks immersion. I'm like, fuck off. That's not immersive. You're in a fucking menu. What are you talking about?
You're in a menu
writing your name. That's not immersive.
Yeah, people are objectively the worst. It's just that is an unfortunate fact of the world. But I think that's probably good for this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything? Any other last comments? Either you want to make about the Daggerheart? Dagger? Well, I'm sorry, Rich. What's it called again?
It's Daggerheart.
Okay, yeah. I was right. I said Daggerheart. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right. Dagger's in there, but what? But yeah. Anything else? Either you want to say?
Yeah.
If you want to playtest it, we're recording March 26th, so it might have changed. But currently, they're going to be doing open beta playtesting. You can go to daggerheart.com and you can download all the playtest material and give it a shot. Go to the surveys, fill that out. If you have any complaints or questions or anything else, fill out their surveys because they want the community as active in building this game as any other game. They want an active community. They want people to help them build a game that's for them. Like, they want a game that's for the community, made by the community. So try to help build this game to be as best as it can be.
Yeah. So yeah, that will do it then. Next week, for when people are listening to this, we'll be back to just a regular episode of us talking. I'll probably bore these two with stuff from my vacation.
I'll maybe have Final Fantasy VII beaten by this point.
I mean, I don't know, man. That's like 3 weeks away. So that's 80 more hours of Final Fantasy you have to go.
Yeah.
But if I'm lucky, I'll have Super Mario or Super Nintendo World to talk about.
Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, with that said, if you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, though, you can go to your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All of it helps. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us emails to social@one-quest.com. And Rich, what does your streaming look like?
This is the 11th, right?
Two weeks from now?
Yeah. twitch.tv/b_one on video game streaming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Next week, I believe me and Timmy will be most likely getting into some Helldivers 2 on Tuesday, as well as if I have beaten Final Fantasy by now, I'll probably be playing some Monster Hunter World, maybe getting into some other sorts of games. But I more so want to push as of Wednesday the 10th. My Subnautica series has ended. You should definitely go check that out.
Oh, nice. So the day before this goes up, that will be the final episode?
Yes.
Nice. And I assume so on the 16th is your anticipated Helldivers start?
Yes. 16th should probably be the first day we play Helldivers. I'm probably going to buy it this week, maybe, just in case we beat a way out very early on our stream on Tuesday next week. But we'll see. But it'll definitely be, if I do decide to do Helldivers, it'll at minimum be the 16th will be the first time I play it.
Okay, because next week would be the 2nd, and then the 9th, and then the...
Yes, the 2nd, me and Timmy are doing every other week, so next week,
okay.
The 2nd is a way out, and then the week after that, the 9th, which is prior to the release of this, I probably would have tried to do another Lethal Company stream, and so then it'll be another Helldivers.
Nice. Well, yeah. And then, I guess, thanks for listening. Bye.
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 See you.